I'm going to open the House Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources. Since I got a quorum, just in case I lose one, how about we do some LC introductions? I think we're getting close to the end of these. I can give you brief descriptions here. One has to do with establishing a tip credit for tipped employees relating to minimum wage. One has to do with, there's something for everyone to hate here. One creates a task force on water structure investment. One creates a family leave benefits insurance program paid for by only the employees. One expands water measurement cost sharing program revolving fund. And one permits siting commercial solar photovoltaic power generation facilities on not high-value farmland.
That's why Caddy's.
Maybe a motion first.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I would like to move the following LCs be introduced as committee bills. LC 314, dated 9-2016. LC 1592, dated 12-1-16. LC 3676, dated 2-21-17. LC 3715, dated 2-7-17. And LC 3925, dated 2, and I believe that's just 2-10-17.
Mm-hmm. Vice Chair McLean moves the LCs 314, 1592, 3676, 3715, 3925. Is there any discussion? Reminder, no implied consent because you vote to allow a committee bill to be introduced. Many of these bills would not ever come to this committee anyway, but a few of them might. Any further discussion? Any objection? We're just doing some committee bill introductions.
Oh.
No objections. Committee bills are introduced. Thank you very much, colleagues. Now, let's get into our first public hearing and open public hearing on House Bill 2095. Ask, I know I see Tom's here. Tom, you bring Andy up with you? I don't know if you have anybody else or not, but Randy in spirit. But okay. And you may have to give us a little background because not everybody in here either A, loves land use, or B, knows periodic review mid-cycle. Those terms may not be.
It's an acquired taste, Mr. Chairman. And you're better off not to acquire it. Chair Clem, my name is Tom Hughes. I'm the chair of the Metro Council in the Portland metropolitan area, and I'm here today to testify in support of House Bill 2095. This bill actually arose out of a task force that I created that included 14 mayors, 2 county chairs, 3 metro councilors, representatives from the home builders, 1,000 friends, and DLCD. And it was as a result of the last urban growth process that we went through, where we determined actually for the first time in Metro's history that there was no need at a regional level to expand the urban growth boundary. As you can imagine, that was a somewhat controversial decision, raised some discussion all over the region from a number of people on a number of sides of the issue, and caused us to, as we analyzed that, to commit to two things. One, that we would look at the urban growth report that we're required to do every 6 years, and that we would accelerate that process and do a 3-year report instead to see if the results that we were getting were the results of the recession, and that we were still feeling the impact of the recession, that maybe in 3 years we could determine, if we were a little further away from the recession, that maybe there was a slightly different pattern than we were detecting before. And the other was that this discussion really really unearthed a problem that we felt that existed in our process of dealing with the urban growth boundary, partly as a result of state law, partly as a result of our own rules. And so we pledged the people in the region, particularly our regional partners, that we would convene a group to talk about possible changes in the process. And this bill is a result of that discussion. The poster child for this discussion actually was the city of Wilsonville that had a 300-acre expansion that met many of the principles of good land use planning. It met many of the principles of the 2040 plan, which is the overarching master plan for the development of the Portland metropolitan area. But we could not authorize it for a couple of reasons, but the one that dealt with the urban growth report was that we could show no regional need to expand the urban growth boundary. And so we said, well, you know, 300 acres doesn't exactly blow out the urban growth boundary. It doesn't really violate the principles that we have planned on. And so maybe what we need is some slightly more flexibility in determining what we mean by need. So as we analyze the need factor, that we can actually begin to have enough flexibility so that we can recognize the need at the local level to meet the community desire for balanced community and other kinds of things. And so we have funded a couple of concept plans, master planning processes, including the one in Wilsonville, and it seemed to us that having helped them develop a good planning process, that it would be good for us to get a process that would allow us to deal with that. So what we're trying to do here is to create more certainty for our cities about growth decisions. We would continue to require strong proposals from the cities about why they want to expand the urban growth boundary. We would begin to advance the region's climate smart communities process, which you instructed us to do a number of years ago, and which we completed with the help of the region, and that actually attempts to reduce the number of miles traveled with small vehicle, individual cars and small trucks, but would also provide a greater choice and mix of housing in the growing communities. So this process, we met about five times, the group that I suggested to you, and this is what we came up with. And at the end of the day, I think in a fairly remarkable way, we got consensus from all of those groups that this sort of minor tweak in the process was reasonable. And the portion of it then that requires change in state law comes to you as a committee bill from the – we testified, of course, before your committee this summer, and the committee put this forward as a committee bill. And so we're here today to ask you for your support, to ask you to help us continue to move the system that we have used in the Portland metropolitan area, continue to improve it with this kind of thing. There are still three more vexing issues that we face: planning for new areas, governing them, and financing the infrastructure that we need in order to be able to expand it. And one of the things that this bill will help us do is to work with the cities to sort of answer those questions as they go through the planning process. We're asking for a do pass on this particular bill, and I'm going to let Andy explain, as he can do better than I, the details about the proposal.
Thank you, Andy Shaw, Metro staff, here representing Randy Spirit, I hope. On the screen here, you see Metro's 2040 growth concept. This is the region's plan for how our region's going to accommodate a very significant amount of growth over time, growing primarily in centers, which are the purple and pink areas and corridors along major transportation routes. The next slide, There you go. The next slide shows all the areas that have been added to the urban growth boundary over time that Metro has managed. Whenever we are considering or looking at expanding the urban growth boundary, we have to go through a very comprehensive review of employment growth, population growth, and the region's ability to actually accommodate that growth within the UGB or in areas outside the UGB. And state law directs us to do that every 6 years. Under this bill, we will continue to do that six-year comprehensive review. What this measure would do is allow us in the middle of those 6 years to do a review with a limited amount of UGB capacity, and if we find a need to revise the previous comprehensive review, we could do so and add land at a city's request. The next slide, thanks. So when we do that forecast, this gives you a sense of the complicated nature. It's a very expensive, staff-intensive, and locally involving process. We literally look at every lot in the region. We work with all of our jurisdictions to identify which areas can accommodate growth, which areas are vacant, which areas have the possibility for redevelopment, which areas are zoned for capacity but are actually too steep or have wetland complications that would not allow them to be developed upon. So we start with total zone capacity and work our way down through practical considerations about what can be developed and then market considerations about what could be developed. And we end up with what we think is the region's capacity to accommodate housing and employment. And then we decide, do we need more land to accommodate that level of growth? We'll continue doing all of this great work, and it's something that we value working with our cities to understand how they plan to accommodate growth within their city and rolling that all up into one regional review. If you could do the next slide, thanks. So this almost unreadable slide shows you the old UGB system that we managed before 2010, where in the first box we would do this comprehensive look at the need for land. We would then pick a place to expand the boundary if we needed to expand. And lastly, we would plan that area. Nobody really liked that process very much. So beginning in 2010 and just before that, we started to fund planning in UGB expansion areas so that a city could show what it was going to bring the region, and it could begin to examine the kinds of housing, the kinds of employment, the kinds of commercial development that would go in those areas and begin exploring the question of how to pay for that growth. Also, it began a community discussion about the need for or the willingness to accept that growth. So rather than planning it after we expanded the boundary, we're now planning it beforehand. If you could do the next. So this shows, and the next one. The new urban growth boundary system that we have in place now that we used in 2010 is doing that concept planning up front and asking our local communities, where would you like to accommodate more growth in this region? Then going through the needs analysis process to determine if the region as a whole needs land to accommodate future growth. And lastly, choosing the particular places to go. The next slide shows what the task force work did, which is trying to improve each step along the way. So, sorry, if you could click through. In the first category, Metro is working now with our partners locally to identify code changes to Metro code that will clarify the kinds of expectations that we would ask of cities to bring forth their plans and to show how a new growth near them is going to help their city, help their center, that purple area in the middle of most of our cities. How will new bodies in their people in their community help improve their downtown? How will it bring people closer to job centers, which is part of our climate smart goals in getting folks closer to where they work to the extent we can. All that would happen up front, and Metro is working on that as a local code amendment process with our partners. we're hoping that in the second box there, you will help us with this legislation by giving us clear authority in the middle of that six-year cycle to revise the previous forecast that we've done, and with a city coming forward with a request for this additional growth and showing that there's a need for that growth, that we could then accommodate some small additions. The additions that we're looking at are in the range of 300 or fewer acres. Wilsonville, I think, has the largest expansion request. The others we know of add up to about 500 acres total currently. So in essence, what we're trying to do is create a queue where we're funding the planning ahead of time, we're looking intelligently at the impacts of that growth, and then have the flexibility either at the six-year comprehensive review or in this mid-cycle to consider whether adding land to the boundary makes sense for our region's growth overall. And then lastly, the bill in this instance, at this mid-cycle point, the bill would allow Metro to go ahead and pick that place that the city has brought forward. Currently, we're required to look around at a number of places when normally considering urban growth and looking at where to grow. We'd like for this mid-cycle to be relieved of that need to study. We don't want to get caught up agreeing to add a particular place and have someone say, hey, you should have studied these other areas. They might be better. UGB expansions, but they won't have been planned. They won't have been requested. They don't have a city necessarily that's ready to annex and govern that land. So that's the third item of the bill. The next slide. So we still expect most growth in our region to occur in these city centers and along transportation corridors. This just is a representation of growth that's occurred in the region over time. You can see the little bar charts going up and down represent most of those city centers throughout the region, out in Hillsboro, down in Wilsonville, out in Gresham, and in downtown Portland. So there's growth occurring all over our region. We expect it to largely continue in those areas. But in the next, you can see the orangish areas are areas within the UGB that are ready for development. The bluish are the what we expect to be the urban reserves, the areas that we will be expanding onto over time to accommodate growth that requires more land. Those are the areas that we expect growth to be occurring, and this bill would allow us a little more flexibility to sort of meter in land in those urban growth, in those urban reserve areas. An important point I forgot to mention. The bill requires that we're picking from designated and acknowledged urban reserves. It also requires that urban and rural reserves have been adopted in the region before this authority would kick in. And the last slide. So back to the map of how we plan to grow. We urge you to enact this bill. Give us a little more flexibility. I think our general policy principle around land use is asking the legislature to set the rules for how decisions are made in land use, and then allowing local governments to go ahead and make those decisions and implement the policy that best suits the citizens of, in our case, our region or our partner local governments. And in this case, we're asking you to tweak the rules that govern how we make these decisions, and then let us go ahead and manage that system. Thank you.
Vice Chair McLean.
Andy, the only thing that, from my reading, that I didn't hear you talk about was you have a midterm adjustment that you've just described, and I think the only thing is that you talked about right now, you know that there are possibly being 500 acres that are out there sitting waiting to maybe make that request after the rural reserves have actually been decided in Clackamas County and finished up in Multnomah County. So is there a cap on how many acres can actually be brought in the mid-cycle?
Yeah, in the bill, it limits the authority for mid-cycle adjustments to 1,000 acres. And the idea for that was the task force talked a lot about really looking at this mid-cycle authority as allowing some modest UGB expansions. But defining modest was challenging, and folks wanted both some flexibility and some certainty and wanted to balance both of those. So the 1,000 acres came in because if somehow cities came forth with requests for 1,000 acres every mid-cycle over the next 45 years, over the life of the urban reserves, we would use less than one-third of the total urban reserves in that process. We didn't expect that to happen. I think our challenge actually is working with a lot of our cities to actually get ready for growth and to do the planning and to be prepared. Cities like Wilsonville are stepping up and are talking with their community and thinking about the financing of infrastructure. I think our challenge is going to be talking with our residents about how we accommodate all the growth that's coming and fund the infrastructure to allow that growth.
Yeah, Representative Escobar.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Tom, we didn't receive your presentation during the summer because that was actually a different committee than
yeah,
we
I
have
know.
Here. Maybe you could explain to people how Metro was built, what started it, how it came about. Was it done by the municipality? Because what you are is you're regional problem solving for the metro area. That's exactly what you are. So, and that's very difficult to do, I might add, because it took us 12 years down in Medford.
Chair Clem, Representative Escobar, Metro is kind of got a double parentage. It is based both on state legislature statute that created the authority to do it and a home rule charter that was passed and amended by the voters in the region. And so unlike a lot of other regions in the United States that have regional governments that are councils on government that are composed of city councilors and city and mayors that have been appointed by their jurisdiction to represent them on the council of government, Metro is really the only independent regional government, but we're the only elected regional government in the United States. And so the voters in the region had decided a number of years ago to go to that the people on this regional government board ought to be elected by the voters. And so we've kind of honed that down now to where there are seven of us. Land use planning is one of our responsibilities. We do the urban growth boundary. We do the 2040 plan. So we sort of set guidelines for how local jurisdictions, within which local jurisdictions do the planning for their own community. We also are the conduit for federal flexible funding for transportation. So we receive about, the region receives about $35 million every year, that we distribute around the region through our Joint Policy Advisory Committee on Transportation and Metro Council. As long as you've got a regional government, we might as well pick up the garbage. And so we do that. We oversee the collection of solid waste for the region. And along the way, people kind of said, you know, there's a regional government there, so if we feel like this particular service that we're doing has gotten too expensive, let's offload that. So we also run the zoo and the convention center and the expo center. We have 14 pioneer cemeteries and a golf course.
Follow up?
Yes, please.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now, we do annexation by request.
Right.
How do you guys do it up there? And the other thing is how does, because when we do our urban growth boundary, we have to go out 10 years, I think it is, for a inventory. How do you do that? Obviously, you don't. You do it every 6 years, but I mean.
Well, so every 6 years, we look out 20 years and ensure that we have 20 years worth of land to accommodate both employment and population growth. Metro doesn't annex land for urban development. When we add land to the urban growth boundary, it's annexed into our district, but a city needs to annex that land in order to then do the comprehensive planning and zoning. So
it's kind of like an MPO?
We are the MPO, the Metropolitan Planning Organization for the region. We also are the land use planning entity for the region.
You got it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And you might tell them what reserves are as well, because they're not commonly used
elsewhere.
Sure.
So about 10 years ago, a coalition of folks from our region, again, back then frustrated with the inability to consider adding land to the boundary that we felt was the best place to grow, largely because of soil considerations. Folks came down here and asked for the authority to establish urban and rural reserves. And the idea was we would work with our communities, the counties, and Metro would convene. And we did. We convened hundreds of people over hundreds of hours Lots of testimony, examined all the areas around the urban growth boundary, and came up with a plan for what we thought were the best places to potentially grow over time, given existing communities, the ability to put infrastructure out onto those areas. So it's meant to be a 50-year reserve of land that we can use to add to the boundary and consider other things beyond soil type, like the ability of a city to actually provide the infrastructure and that area adding to existing centers and corridors that we already have put a lot of investment into.
But the flip side of that also is the 50-year rural reserves essentially protect farmland, the highest value farmland for the next 50 years, so that the farmer can have some assurance that over the next 50 years, his ability to continue to farm, his or her ability to continue to farm, is going to be sufficient that they can think in terms of planting orchards or building new silos or sending their kids to Oregon State to get degrees in agriculture.
That's
so
right.
Though all of those things, I think, are part and parcel of that particular bill.
So on reserves, we have had quite a circuitous route in getting urban and rural reserves finished, and involved a couple of stops through DLCD, a lengthy court process that actually threw out the Washington County Reserves, a process of adopting a settlement that was a consensus settlement for the Washington County Reserves, and we are now very close to finalizing reserves for Clackamas and Multnomah County after a court remand that sent us back a very technical set of duties to finish the urban and rural reserves in those two counties.
We'll definitely be talking about it in the next bill, so I don't want to get too hung up on reserves. Hold on, I've got other people in mind. So, Representative Brock Smith.
Thank you. And I appreciate the last bit of this conversation, yeah, because that's where, thank you, Mr. Chair, where my question was going. we've had a number of agencies before our committee over the last few weeks. A number of them are complaint-driven with regards to enforcement. And with the expansion of the UGB, how is Metro going to, or how does, will Metro assist in the mitigation between the inevitable rural-urban interface that's going to occur and help those farmers and ranchers that otherwise fall in this quagmire of litigation, really, as we learned day before yesterday. So that's my question.
Chair Clem, Representative Brock Smith, I think just as a general answer, and I'll let Andy deal with the sort of technicalities, but I think the best way to avoid the legal quagmire is to offer some certainty. And that was what we really intended to do with the reserves. The process of moving from an urban reserve to an urban growth boundary expansion is a very complex process that takes time. The process of adding to the urban reserves is a process that takes even longer and is even less certain. So those folks who have rural reserve, who are in rural reserves, can have a certain degree, a high degree of certainty that they'll be there long enough to accomplish what they need to accomplish. And that kind of eliminates, it either eliminates the legal battle or it moves the legal battle up to the discussion of what happens when we determine reserves. But once the reserves are in place, which they will be, I think, within 2 or 3 months up in our area, at least from the standpoint of what we in the counties can do, then everybody has some assurances, and the need for lawsuits to resolve some of these issues, the number of issues that can be resolved by lawsuits sort of begin to diminish.
I guess the only thing I'd add is during the urban and rural reserves process of identifying how should we map the region, folks are very cognizant of urban and rural and farming and urban development issues, things from, you know, the need to run your tractor and that causes dust and it's flowing over the road into a new development. So trying to look at every area around the region and really thoughtfully map out where do we want to keep intensive farming going and try to create buffers that minimize those conflicts. I mean, you can drive out to the west side of the region and see where pretty intense urban development abuts farming, and that is the urban growth boundary. So it's impossible to eliminate those conflicts, but part of the idea behind this 50-year urban rural reserve plan was to, as smartly as we can, minimize and allow both urban to move ahead and farming to continue.
One thing I'll note in the 2014 work that was done with the local groups and legislature, blessed it, we literally got down to, okay, there's a farm on this side of the road. This is all going to be developed. Where do you draw the line of what's urban and what's rural? And the farmer said, put it on our side of the road so they don't build sidewalks on my field and they're on the other side. And I mean, we were in severe negotiations over one street and where to draw the line on that street. Middle of the road, east side of the road, west side of the road. Typically, we tried to, I think, from the Department of Ag's point of view, use creeks and rivers, not streets, so you had a more natural geographic separation between farms and urban areas. And I think a lot of the areas that we saw before follow that. They're mostly creeks and things, just to give each other a little bit of space.
Well, and I appreciate that, Mr. Chair. I mean, where I was going was our conversation that we had on Tuesday with that unfortunate complaint-driven incident.
So the removal fill guy.
You have a situation where, you know, it's just fresh in our minds, where you could have a, you know, the gentleman move in next door to the hayseed farm, and he's allergic to hayseed, and so then he calls a state agency, and there could be some hydroponic soils on that land because
hydric soils.
Excuse me, soils. Sorry, didn't want to get anybody excited out there.
I think there's
committee. That committee's later on this afternoon.
Group of Union County Commissioners one time designed a song that was called "Slickers and the Stickers." And
yeah.
I think that covers some of the same ideas.
You know, my point is, you know, I'm a rural legislator from Southwest Oregon. What you folks do up in the Portland area, you're doing a great job. I'm not saying. And who am I to tell you, as a rural legislator in Southwest Oregon, and I wish it were the same way on the other end, right, when it comes to land use issues in rural Oregon.
Well, Metro doesn't tell you what to do. It's just me.
It's the people that.
Oh, I mean.
No, it's the folks that live in Metro that tell us what to do. But I just have a concern because of our farmers and ranchers all over the state, and so I just wanted to put on record, and I appreciate the clarification from where you.
ODA really tries to help advise. When they're able to, on Oregon Department of Agriculture, they have a person who specializes in working with cities to try and make it as easy on farmers as possible. Sometimes it drives Mr. Chandler, for example, crazy because he's like, "Hey, where's my liaison for home builders?" But there is definitely a strong voice for the farmers in the land use process, right, for sure. Vice Chair McLean, and then we've got a bunch of people.
I wanted to also indicate that I think it's real important what you said about the fact that there is a cap and that it also is not going to go into place for these kinds of requests until the urban reserves have been settled. Hmm. And the urban and rural reserves have been settled. And so I think that's important because there's a compact there, again, to have that 50-year plan or that 20-year plan, but also add adjustments in mid-cycle that allows you to really deal with some of the items that just come up because life happens and populations change and economy changes. And so there's an opportunity for an adjustment that's going to help everybody. But overall, you're still planning a region for 23 cities and a tri-county area that depend a lot on infrastructure, a lot on jobs and homes that everybody shares. So I think it's a great bill, and I truly support it.
Vice Chair McLean, thank you for that. And your point is well taken. And also I would add that this this bill accounts for the interim process. So one of the things that we pledged to do as a result of the last urban growth boundary was to redo the urban growth report. So the urban growth report that's coming up in 2018 will be done under the current existing rules. This bill won't apply until 2021, and so we have a fair amount of time to anticipate, set up the structure to do the kinds of things that we're doing. And I think that's cities in some respects, having been mayor, I can remember our complaint-driven metro is probably one of the agencies in the region that really is less complaint-driven and more planning-driven. I mean, we tend to think in terms of 50-year planning horizons, and I think that's an important element of what we do for the region. So thank you.
Okay, got a couple other elected officials. I'm going to get up. Thank you, gentlemen, for explaining the bill. And I'd like to call Jim Bernard, our Clackamas County Commission Chair, and Tim Knapp, the Mayor of Wilsonville, up. Welcome, gentlemen. Tim, I've got you first, and also representing some other mayors, it sounds like.
Yes, sir. Good day, Chair Clem, Vice Chairs McLean and Springer, and committee members. I am Tim Knapp, the mayor of Wilsonville, and I'm here to seek your support for House Bill 2095. I did serve as one of numerous mayors on the task force that President Hughes just alluded to, and this bill is the outcome of that joint task force work. I was impressed by the range of interests, including home builders and Thousand Friends and DLCD rep, and all at that table and all coming to a compromise. This proposal is a compromise. It's not verbatim what any of those stakeholders wanted. It was a common ground that everybody arrived at after numerous meetings of intensive discussion about what the merits of this proposal would be. This is a practical solution to try to make the process work on the ground in a practical way. And like other cities, this would give Metro the ability to have a little more leeway to make modest adjustments midway through the six-year cycle. This is especially important as we've seen the huge rate of change in demand for housing in the metropolitan area in the last couple of years, the impacts of traffic, the fact that people are pushing further and further out into rural communities and into even farmland looking for housing that they can afford, and causing increased traffic congestion on the roadway network. We need to be able to provide housing when it's needed. This would allow Metro to accommodate population growth in those cities that have demonstrated the ability to develop and to provide the services that are needed for development to go forward. So the cities would have to do the advanced concept planning. They'd have to request a urban growth boundary expansion. They'd have to demonstrate their capability of moving that development forward. As has been noted already, the urban reserve must exist before any of this midterm process could happen. I think it's important that Metro is recognizing that they need a city municipality in order to move forward successfully with growth like this, and containing that within the broad urban area is one of the critical factors about not just spilling outward onto farmland. So Wilsonville has a history of successful development. We've done the 500-acre, 2,600 residential unit Villebois Urban Village. We're working on the 225-acre Coffee Creek regionally significant industrial area that was designated some years ago. And within the next couple of years, as Villebois builds out, we're going to be ready to move into the 500-acre Frog Pond proposed residential development area, 325 acres of which is urban reserves that we need to be able to bring in. And Metro, I think, recognizes that this is an appropriate type of an expansion and appropriate responsibility. We respectfully urge you to take a due pass vote on 2095, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Let's hear from the chair first and we'll take questions.
Okay, hi. Chair Clam, Vice Chair McLean, and Springer, members of the committee, I am the new chair-elect Clackamas County Commission. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today before you alongside...
Jim, I have to have you say your name, too.
Pardon?
I have to have you say your name.
Oh, did I say it?
You said title, but yeah.
Okay. Jim Bernard.
Thank you.
I'm here in support of HB 2094. Oh, they switched numbers on here. 2095.
Someone just did a little happy dance back there, but I'm not sure that's going to...
They switched numbers on me here. I wasn't actually on this committee until the very last meeting. The former chair of the commission actually supported this concept and worked with Metro and the cities to come to the conclusion that a mid-year cycle would be a good idea, especially in the fact that home prices, the lack of housing opportunities in the Metro region is just accelerating, and this would give us an opportunity to help those folks like Wilsonville have worked hard to bring in areas of importance and near a freeway. So, you know, it has a great lesser impact on freeways. And we're here with Metro, too, because we've decided that we could be great partners now with the new board of Clackamas County Commission. And we're working collaboratively to resolve some of those issues, which we'll talk about in the next bill. 6 years is a long time, and a lot of things have changed. And of course, the economy back 6 years ago was quite different than it is now, and there's a lot of growth, so we need to be prepared. And this could happen again and again in the near future. So, a mid-year cycle is a mid-cycle opportunity to look at land use expansion is very important. So with that, I hope you will support HB 2095.
Great. Any questions for each gentleman? Yes, Mr. Mayor.
Chair Clem, Vice Chair McLean, and committee members, I also wanted to state that I was asked to speak on behalf of the Metropolitan Mayors Consortium, which is a group of all the city mayors within the metropolitan boundary. This is one of the groups that petitioned Metro to create the task force to study this issue and find a way to make some more practical adjustments as we go through the urban growth management process. And we're very gratified that Metro President Hughes chose to do that and that the process has yielded a successful consensus outcome. The Metropolitan Mayors Consortium is in support of this bill. You have written testimony to that effect on record, and they wanted me to represent that group in testimony here today also as an endorser of the process and of the outcome leading to this bill, and recommend a do pass on 2095. Thank you.
Great. Okay, thank you. I think that's it, gentlemen. Could I get Colin Cooper and Andy Smith up? While we're in transition here, I will say one of the things that's really great about this bill, Tom, you'll remember we had several conversations about, I think it was with maybe previous Clackamas County commissioners and others about, okay, can you promise that Advance Road is going to be soon, like right at the top of the list? I'm like, well, can sort of promise, but you never really know. And so this tool will help honor that commitment, that when you have a non-controversial area of land, there's a way to get it in more quickly. And I think at the time when we promised we'll try, I don't know that we knew what the mechanism was going to be to keep the promise, but this will be a good way to do it. So please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Andy Smith, Government Relations Manager for the City of Hillsborough. We're here to offer our support for House Bill 2095. Colin will explain a few of the reasons why we do support the bill. I'll just say that we very much appreciate the process that Metro put together around this effort. We were included from the beginning. We were also included in the development of the Dash 1 amendments, which I don't think have been mentioned yet. But we support the bill, and we would support it with the amendments as well. And with that, I'll turn it over to Colin.
Great.
Good morning, Chair Clem, Vice Chair McLean, and members of the committee. Colin Cooper, Planning Director for the City of Hillsborough. Although the city was not a member of the Metropolitan Urban Growth Boundary Task Force, we are very grateful that Metro convened that task force. We worked closely with many of the jurisdictions that were on the task force and with Metro staff in crafting the recommendation that committee ultimately had. We support that recommendation as the foundation for this bill. We request support support of House Bill 2095. I think we've got it right. And we support it for several very important reasons. First, you've heard already in testimony, it's community aspiration, the ability for local communities to meet the demands of growth. In Hillsborough, we're currently at a population of 99,000, and we're growing at almost 2% growth rate year over year right now, and we anticipate that to continue in the near future. So what that does is it allows us to ensure that the second reason is timing. You've heard about the six-year metanormal cycle. Now this bill would allow a mid-year or mid-cycle review. That timing is really critical because we did an independent analysis of all of the urban growth boundary expansions for the last number of years. We found that on average, even when land is brought into the urban growth boundary, it takes approximately 6 years because of the complexities of financing and just moving through sometimes a litigious system. There are many hurdles to actually getting the land into the pipeline, so we really appreciate this opportunity for additional flexibility. We think it's an excellent tool, and for those reasons, we strongly support the passage of this bill. Thank you.
So now that you mentioned something I'm really interested in, I'd like to recruit you for some additional work. This independent analysis you mentioned could come in useful, I think, in some legislative conversations we're having about the role of the urban growth boundary in housing prices. And so we passed a pilot project to expand it in a couple areas to see if that would really help on the supply front. But I keep thinking about all the areas that were put in South Hillsborough that still take time to find the money to lay the infrastructure and get through the other processes. And so I think we need help identifying what the other challenges once they're brought into the UGB is, whether it's tax limitations or like whatever it is that are causing cities who have tons of space but can't yet get any construction started. Is there anything the legislature can do financially or with the legal system to make it possible? Because the temptation is to say move the urban growth boundary out more, but if you're sitting on lots of empty urban growth boundary ready land and you can't get to it for, as you said, 6 years, we got to figure out if there's a way to shorten that up, I think.
We'd be happy to be of assistance.
Yeah. Okay. Anybody for these gentlemen? Great. Then the usual two that come up and testify together in favor of bills, Mary Kyle McCurdy, 1,000 Friends of Oregon, and John Chandler from the Oregon Home Builders Association. It's a normal day. It's a normal day. Actually, I think for the last several years, whether it was Big Look or several things, this is not that uncommon.
No, not at all.
There are otter pairings, Mr.
There are definitely otter pairings. He's just trying to get me to retire at the same time as him. Good morning, Chair Clem and members of the committee. My name is Mary Kyle McCurdy, Deputy Director of 1,000 Friends of Oregon. We're here to support House Bill 2095. And I should say that we've been involved with the creation and implementation of urban and rural reserves in the metro area since its beginning, including serving on the task force represented by Council President Tom Hughes. The metro, we support this bill for several reasons, and I'm going to talk about two of them. First, the metro region has collectively designated urban and rural reserves for the 20 to 30 year time period beyond the current urban growth boundary. And the tool provided in this bill can only be used if the urban and rural reserves are acknowledged. And therefore, the residents of the region, including cities, farmers, development interests, will know where, or now know where, to expect the UGB to expand and where it will not expand. That certainty of urban and rural reserves allows for an orderly mid-cycle small UGB expansion. And the second reason is, although that you were just talking about, Metro's added more than 42 square miles to the UGB since 1998, and most of that has been in relatively flat areas, much of it farmland, fewer than 5,400 homes have been built, due in large part to the high cost of infrastructure to serve those areas. For example, the actual cost of roads, sewer, stormwater facilities in the North Bethany and South Hillsborough urban growth boundary additions have been estimated to be running at about $40,000 to $100,000 per housing unit. The full suite of new infrastructure to serve raw land is not cheap. And excuse me, the process defined by HB 2095 would be available only to those cities that are ready with not only a well-planned development proposal, but an infrastructure funding proposal. And therefore, we recommend that you support House Bill 2095. Thank you.
All right. Mr. Chandler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. John Chandler here on behalf of both the Oregon Home Builders Association and our Portland affiliate, the Home Builders Association of Metropolitan Portland. I was not directly involved in the negotiations on this bill, so I prefer not to take a quiz on its exact contents. But my Portland folks were, from the very beginning to the end, they report to me, and from the outside looking, it's obvious that the development community's concerns were taken into account, were recognized by this, and the amendments as proposed, really does move the process forward in a way that I think protects both farm and forest land and the need to get affordable housing and other urban development built in a timely fashion in areas which are where it's ready to go forward. From my perspective, though, I just want to point out one thing, that I really appreciate what Metro and the local governments have done with this bill. Since we started doing land use planning when Tom McCall come down from Mount Sinai with it under his arm, the UGB has become a thing all by itself. And from our standpoint, the urban growth boundary was never intended to be the point of the land use system. It was intended to be a tool to facilitate land use planning. I think a bill like this one recognizes that to put too much weight on that six-year cycle, too much weight on the precise mathematics that go into guessing 20 years out, really does still elevate the UGB beyond what it needs to be. This allows us a nice safety valve process. Because we have urban reserves in place, because we have a planning system that's been underway for a long time, I think this will really help make the system function in a better practical matter, not necessarily as entertainment for lawyers and planners. We commend the amendment to you, and we commend the bill. Thank you very much. We're glad to take fairly vague questions.
Questions for these two?
I have to say something.
Vice Chair McClain.
I'm going to vote for it even though you're in favor of it. And, you know, that hasn't always been the story, right? I wanted to clear that up today because, I mean, it's
I'm glad I'm sitting down, Mr. Chairman.
Kumbaya. I mean, you know, we have a kumbaya moment. We have to accept that.
Representative Brocksmith.
I just to add comedy on the other side, I'm going to vote for it even though 1,000 friends are in favor of it.
I'm going to say perfect.
So. Thank you, Representative Brocksmith.
Now what do I do?
Okay. There was a reference to the Dash 1 amendments. If people are either unaware of what they are or not in favor that already testified, please let us know. We're not doing anything today, but if you know, it sounds like they're also consensus amendments, but for those who didn't testify to those specifically, let us know if that's not true. I see lots of heads nodding. But
Chair Clem, we've reviewed the amendments as they were being developed and as you now have them, and we're totally supportive of them.
Okay. Okay, great. Thank you. Then I'm going to –
yes.
That's the end of my list. I miss anybody on this bill? Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2095, and we're going to divert for just a second because we have a legislator here on his bills and it won't take long, and talk about abandoned cemeteries. So why don't you come tell us about these entities and what you would like to do to them or with them. And I'm going to open a public hearing on both of them at the same time, so you can go really expeditiously. House Bill 2515 is open for public hearing. House Bill 2516 is open for public hearing.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I do appreciate your courtesy this morning in adjusting your schedule to try and accommodate mine. Yes, Mr. Chairman, we want to talk about cemeteries, and in particular about abandoned cemeteries. And my interest in this topic was sparked when I was contacted by one of my county commissioners who indicated that in my home county of Lincoln County, there are in fact 9 abandoned cemeteries. And you have to say, what the heck's going on? And the issue is that our attitudes about death and post-death are changing. And that more people are becoming cremated. More people are being interned in different kinds of ways. And the result of that is affecting traditional cemeteries in their cash flow because they're not getting the business that they need to continue to operate as they often have. And so we find that an increasing number of cemeteries, particularly small cemeteries, are going into foreclosure and ending up in the hands of our counties, who in many cases just simply don't have the resources with a number of competing concerns to maintain them. And what that then again means that our family members, our veterans, our history is becoming overgrown with blackberry bushes, with graffiti, with trash, and with other kinds of issues. And so I wanted to take a look at what we could do to address this this important but under-recognized concern. Again, Lincoln County, 9 small abandoned cemeteries scattered around the county, and I'm sure that in your own counties, if you did some research, you'd find that you have similar kinds of problems where you are. And the notion I had being out at the beach is that maybe we do something like the SOLVE program, where we bring volunteers together on a periodic basis to do cleanup and to do good works and to take advantage of their willingness to volunteer for good causes and make a productive and positive difference in our community. And that was the foundation that I started with. And I began to look at this in a little more detail. Of course, working in cemeteries involves some sensitivities a little bit differently than those that you might encounter when you go to pick up trash on the beach. Mm. You have sensitivities in terms of proper respect, proper treatment, and a number of other kinds of issues. And State Parks was very kind to work with me on this, and what we developed was the suggestion that we authorize a permitting process, that State Parks can issue permits to appropriate groups to maintain some of our cemetery properties. And the permitting process would be designed to, in fact, identify that there is proper preparation, proper respect, proper sensitivity to the fact that that we are dealing in a unique environment. That's really what it comes down to, Mr. Speaker, is authorizing state parks to issue permits for groups of people, whether it be VFW groups, Boy Scout groups, groups of people that otherwise might show up at veteran cemeteries on their motorcycles with flags and get them involved in helping take care of those veterans after the funeral. We want to find a way to move forward and help interested volunteers take care of our history and our relatives and our veterans that are in these abandoned properties. The other building,
that's 2516.
That's 2516, and the only thing I might mention about that is I have idea why Section 7 was attached, adding an emergency clause to this, but sometimes they have a way of sprouting up like blackberry bushes in abandoned cemeteries.
That's pretty ironic. You got an emergency clause tacked on. You and Bill Post.
So let me move over to 2515, which is a very simple and straightforward piece of legislation. There are cemetery plots that that change hands over time. Imagine, if you would, for a moment, that the Clem family has a family plot on a piece of property that they later sell to somebody, and so they no longer own the surrounding property, but they still have interest in the Clem family plot. And under current state law, the Clem family would have the authority to have an easement across that surrounding property to visit their family cemetery. We also offer a easement to other people to cross private property to visit surrounded cemeteries if they are interested in historic research. Well, I would hope that all of us are interested in historic research. This simple bill, 2515, would change the phrasing of state statute to say that rather than being interested in, that you would actually be conducting historic research in order to cross private property and visit these surrounded cemeteries. So those are the two cemetery bills I have before you today, Mr. Chairman. I would be happy to answer any questions.
Questions, Reverend McCune.
Chair Clem, I just have a comment, particularly on 2516, and Chair Clem will recognize the issue around a pioneer cemetery in my district that abuts a high school. For a long time was abused, disavowed, the story of legend, particularly around Halloween, as you can imagine. But a young woman, an eighth grader actually, took it upon herself to bring national attention to herself by creating work involving students in rehabilitating and honoring this cemetery that's actually owned by the city. And she went on over the course of her years at Marshfield High School to become nationally recognized as a historian. She drew a lot of grant money on her quest to make sure that the history of this community was honored. And now that she's grown, gone,
off to college and living her life, that remains in our community, and she set a standard for that that's been just absolutely remarkable. And what you're doing with this, I think, is kind of taking that model and codifying it and allowing the parks to have an opportunity to bring in volunteers. But that partnership with these high school students in the community history has just been really, really interesting and fascinating to watch. And now there's work that's done every Memorial Day. They go in and they clean it up. Everything's taken care of. There's no longer the desecration that used to occur in the cemetery. It's revered now and not looked upon with fear, scorn, and a way to have a happy Halloween party. So I appreciate you bringing attention to this. I think this can be replicated in communities across the state. And I think for our young people in particular, there's an opportunity to honor our history. So I thank you for it.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McEwen, thank you very much for that positive example of exactly what we're trying to facilitate here across the state.
And I'll look to Chair Clem to assume that there was never any nefarious activity done by either one of us in that cemetery over the years, even though the opportunities presented themselves.
I'm not going to comment on that. I live two blocks from it. It got a little weird at night. Sometimes we're bored. May have ended up there once or twice. Okay. Any further questions? Great. And the Parks Department's in favor. They're here, but I don't think they necessarily want to come up if they don't have to, I'm guessing. Yeah, no. Great. I will mention, just since I've got the opportunity to finally get it on the record somewhere, there actually isn't a plot for the Clem family. Might as well just say it. So what we did was we actually, it wasn't my idea, but I participated. We loaded my grandfather's ashes into shotgun shells, and we shot him, shot Grandpa, off the top of a mountain in eastern Oregon in his favorite deer hunting area while holding, with my 85-year-old grandmother, a can of hams in the left hand and a 12-gauge with Grandpa on it in the right hand.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
just
as Representative McEwen has given us a remarkable example of why this bill is needed, you've given us another one, and that is that standards are in fact changing, which affects the cash flow of cemeteries and makes it more difficult for them to continue to operate without our help.
That's right.
Thank you, okay. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Thanks. I'm going to close the public hearings on House Bills 2515 and 2516. Go back into urban rural reserve land use world by opening a public hearing on House Bill 2094. And where's my list? Ask Dave Honeycutt to come up and explain this bill. Are you coming?
Possibly.
And Sean Jillians, yeah. I want you two come up together.
Double trouble here.
Yep. Okay. Tell us what you've got in mind here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, Sean Jillians, today representing Metropolitan Land Group and Lanphier Construction and Development, which are two developers who have properties within the urban and rural reserve designation of Metro. Also wanted to put on the record in favor of hams, beer, 12 gauges, cemeteries, and shotguns. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was an interesting segue on that. Well, I think the timing of this bill was perfect to sort of bring up the other half of the story after House Bill 2095, and I almost came up to oppose it just because it was too kumbaya this morning, and I wouldn't want Representative McLean and Representative Brock Smith to feel so conflicted supporting something I might actually support as well. So the second half of the story, as you heard, for 2095 to be effective and for our land use system in general and the Portland metropolitan region to be effective, after a legislatively approved improvement to the land use system with Senate Bill 1011 in 2007, which established the process for urban and rural reserves. A decade later, we're still not done. And we have two of the three counties who do not have their reserves established. The one county that does have their reserves established is care of your leadership, Chair Clem, in House Bill 4078 from 2014, where the legislature, upon remand from the Court of Appeals, which affects effectively threw out a large portion of the work that was done at the local level, said, look, let's build off of what the locals did, let's make tweaks around the edges and figure out how we can actually get reserves established for Washington County. And effectively, we ended up with a consensus bill, a number of meetings that happened here in the legislature and also in the local communities. We'll all remember, well, the committee's somewhat new, but Chair Clem will remember meeting all day on a Sunday at Hillsborough City Hall with all the stakeholders as we were sort of going through where exactly the problem areas were, what were the most contentious. I certainly would give credit to the local communities, the stakeholders who were involved, the thousands of hours that were done. I think, though, as is the case with anything, and you all see it here in the legislature, nothing that you do is perfect. And there are always going to be little issues. And when you're designated tens of thousands of acres, there are going to be little areas that were problematic that were not designated correctly. And that's what led to the appeals with the Court of Appeals. There are certain areas, and the Court of Appeals agreed where certain factors were not taken into account correctly and the designations were incorrect. I have a particular client where their land was designated urban reserve. It's immediately adjacent to the urban growth boundary. Services are stubbed right to the very edge. It is not high-value farmland, and yet it was designated rural reserve, and it's the primary reason for that is it's on the edge of Multnomah County and Washington County, not necessarily to preserve agriculture. So there were these little areas. You see the lawsuits that were the result of that. How does that lead to House Bill 2094 and the language that's actually in it? It doesn't at all. How it leads to House Bill 2094 is the relating clause for House Bill 2094, which is relating to land reserves. And many of you will know that we have brought, since 2014, several bills to resolve the urban and rural reserves for Clackamas and Multnomah counties. We would like to see those three-county region be resolved so that we can go back to our normal fights up there about where the urban growth boundary will go to ensure, as you all saw Mr. Shaw's map, that we never have another Damascus where you see the urban growth boundary expansions or the reserves happen in a large area that will never develop. Damascus is probably the impetus for most of the legislation we bring in bashing the land use system, but it's also the impetus for urban and rural reserves. And it was interesting to hear the testimony about how they can plan out now where our development's going to go for future UGB expansions. That's only because of reserves. If we didn't have urban reserves to say this is where development is definitively going to go, no one would put the time and effort into planning that future area. So it has been an improvement, but it's been a contentious one. It's been one that the legislature authorized. It's one that the legislature has stepped into, and it's one that the legislature likely will continue to make tweaks and improvements on. We don't have an amendment at this point, Mr. Chair. I know some stakeholders have looked at that. Obviously, there is a Senate bill that deals with reserves at this point. I think we've sort of thought that was a starting point for conversations about how we resolve the reserves in general. The one thing I would say, Mr. Chair, about some of your questions regarding South Hillsborough and some of the areas that were brought in from the 2010 UGB expansion in House Bill 4078. In the South Cooper Mountain area, you've actually seen a ton of development come in. It was more development ready, and you saw the permits get pulled quickly. You see big cranes up there and high schools going in. Yeah. If we had it to do all over again with South Hillsborough, probably wouldn't choose an area that had a rail crossing. That caused a significant amount of delay. And I think now that that issue has been resolved, you'll see South Hillsborough sort of take off. But that was one of the sort of unique things that you couldn't anticipate that really put a delay with that. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'll turn it over to Mr. Honeycutt. I'm sure we're happy to answer any questions when he's done.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Dave Honeycutt, Oregonians in Action, here in, well, I can't say I'm in support of the language of the current language of House Bill 2094, but I certainly am in support of the relating clause and hope that we can give the bill a little purpose and help move it along. As has been mentioned in both the conversation, in both Mr. Jillian's comments and the conversation on the previous bill, House Bill 2095, the issue here is the timing of the urban and rural reserve designations for the Tri-County area for Washington, Clackamas, and Multnomah counties. Under our reserve system, Metro is responsible for creating and designating the urban reserves, and the three counties are responsible for designating and creating the rural reserve areas. That work was done. The bill was passed in 2000. The bill creating the reserve system was passed in 2007. The three counties and Metro immediately convened and in 2010 designated their urban and rural reserves. The way the land use process works, those reserve determinations were then sent to LCDC, Land Conservation and Development Commission, for acknowledgement, and were acknowledged in 2012. Also, as the land use system works, the LCDC's acknowledgement was immediately challenged and appealed by 8,000 different people that were disappointed one way or the other with the outcome. And in 2014, 4 years after the reserves were designated by the Metro and the three counties, the Oregon Court of Appeals invalidated the reserve designations. You guys stepped in, and we're very much appreciative of that, with House Bill 4078 in 2014, and were able to designate the reserves for Washington County, but we couldn't get there at that time, all but those of us that were involved in those negotiations, and with the chair's leadership. We couldn't get there for Clackamas and Multnomah counties, and so those Clackamas and Multnomah County reserve designations 7 years after they were initially set are still unresolved. That's a long time to wait for determinations on where growth's going to go in the economic engine of the state of Oregon, and we think 7 years is long enough. We will hear I believe that there'll be certainly be some opposition to what we're trying to do, and I believe that opposition will be based on two particular theories. Number one, the process. We have a process and statute set forth for making these determinations, and the legislature shouldn't step in and interfere with that process. And number two, local control, that the counties and Metro should be entitled to make their own determinations of where the reserves are, and it's not the job of the legislature to step in and second guess those. I want to go into the process piece first. Now, understand, we're already 7 years behind, and Metro reviews the boundary in 6 year cycles, so we're already one full cycle behind where the reserve determinations are made. Once the cities, and this is I'm going to give you best case scenario. Once the counties and Metro designate their reserves, and I know Clackamas County and Metro are certainly working on theirs right now, and I believe the county and Metro are scheduled for hearings on their reserves in March and April next month and the following month. Multnomah County, as far as I know, hasn't even started yet. But assuming that they get started at some point this spring, we could conceivably have the reserve designations done by the counties and Metro by, say, June of this year, in a few months. The way the process works from there, those reserve designations are then forwarded to LCDC, and LCDC has to acknowledge those reserve designations. LCDC meets on a monthly basis, and so best case scenario, we get LCDC to schedule hearings on the reserve designations by mid-fall, maybe late, maybe the early winter, and we get an acknowledgement, let's say, by LCDC in November or December of this year. So we're now at the end of the year. It's at that point that the fund begins. We have, once LCDC makes its acknowledgement in the way our land use system works, anyone who appeared at the local level or in front of LCDC has standing then to challenge that acknowledgement decision, and it immediately goes to the Court of Appeals. It doesn't go to LUBA. It goes immediately to the Court of Appeals. There have been, since 1997, I went back and looked, Metro has adopted UGB expansions or reserve designations seven times since 1997, and here's what happened in each one. In 97, Metro added 18,579 acres of urban reserve area. Metro got sued. LCDC acknowledged. Metro got sued. The Oregon Court of Appeals overturned. and that was in 2000. So that took 3 years. In 98, Metro added 830 acres to the urban growth boundary. Metro got sued. The Oregon Court of Appeals overturned the decision in 2001. So that's 3 years from the time that that Metro had made their decision. In 98, again, 98 was a busy year for Metro. Metro added 109 acres to the boundary. Metro got sued. The Oregon Court of Appeals overturned the decision in 2001. So that's 3 years. In 1998, again, Metro added 354 acres to the boundary. Metro got sued. Metro actually won that case, but it took 4 years instead of three. Their normal three-year pattern turned into a four-year pattern. In 2002, Metro added 18,638 acres to the boundary. That was their big boundary, 2002 boundary expansion. Metro got sued. The Oregon Court of Appeals overturned the decision in 2005. That, again, took 3 years. In 2010, they adopted the urban and rural reserves. They got sued, and the Court of Appeals overturned the decision in 2014, which led to 4078. And in 2011, they added approximately 2,000 acres to the boundary. They got sued, but before the Oregon Court of Appeals could overturn, and they would have because their decision was based on the reserves, which the Court of Appeals invalidated in 2014, you guys stepped forward with 4078 and solved the problem. So my point is, we see a pattern here. And the pattern, every expansion that or urban reserve designation that Metro has made has been challenged to the Court of Appeals. Six out of the seven times that they've done so, the Court of Appeals has overturned the decision. But best case scenario, if we get the Clackamas and Multnomah counties and Metro to get their work done by the middle of the summer, and it gets acknowledged by the Court of Appeals or by LCDC and challenged to the Court of Appeals, and it will get challenged to the Court of Appeals. Everyone, all seven of the previous ones have been. Best case scenario, we're looking at the end of 2020 or the end of 2020 or the start of 2021 before we get a Court of Appeals decision. And even if that Court of Appeals decision is favorable and affirms Metro, which they've only done once out of the last seven times, we're still now almost two full cycles of Metro review before we get the reserve designations done. And we can't wait that long. It's time to get the reserve designations done so that we can move on. We can have the certainty that I think everybody in this room wants, from the government planning side to the development side to the agriculture side. We can get it done and get it set. Now that leads me to my second or to the second argument I think that they'll make in opposition to this. That's the local control. The legislature should stay out. You guys haven't really ever given much credence to that argument, and I think we could point that out. In 2013, you folks adopted House Bill 3067. The bill was sponsored by Senator Johnson and Representative Reed. What 3067 did is it amended for the first time ever the boundaries between Multnomah County and Washington County. Washington County's boundary had never changed before. Under 3067, Washington County's boundary changed, and it changed to include an area known as Area 93 or Bonnie Slope. Why did we have to move Bonnie Slope out of Multnomah County and into Washington County? Because Metro had included the area in 2002 in the urban growth boundary with no ability for the city of Portland or Multnomah County to provide the infrastructure necessary to develop the property. So they brought an area into the UGB with no ability to develop it. And, of course, Washington County had infrastructure needed to develop it, but wouldn't agree to provide that infrastructure until the land actually was inside Washington County. So you fixed that in 2013 as a result of the Metro boundary expansion. In 14, you did 4078. We know what that's about. In 15, and that was, by the way, Mr. Chair, as you recall, 4078 was a Clem Davis bill, so it was a bipartisan bill.
Don't forget Unger.
Yeah. In 15, we had two bills, 3084 and 3085. 3084, both those bills were Fagan-Kennemer bills, so again, bipartisan bills. And both of those bills dealt with Damascus. Damascus, as all of you know that have been around here at any time, was a very... It was a difficult situation. Damascus was a city created. Why was Damascus created? Because in 2002, Metro brought in 3,000, well, actually, it was a large expansion, but there was about 3,000 acres over in Clackamas County that had no water, no sewer, and no chance to get the water and sewer. They brought that into the boundary and said, this is development land. We're now 15 years into that process in Damascus. There's still no water there. There's still no sewer. The people that lived out there created a city. It became contentious, and in 2015, you folks had had enough and put a asked the for a ballot measure to be put on the ballot, which essentially invalidated Damascus, all as a result of planning decisions made by Metro. My point isn't to harp on Metro. My point is that sometimes the legislature needs to step in and help get things across the finish line. We think this is the time to help get these things across the finish line. This is a complicated process, and it always results in litigation. And you can short-circuit that process and the resulting litigation if you'll step in and help us out, and that's what we're asking you to do.
Okay, and specifically, this bill's contents aren't what you're asking us to do. At some point, you may ask us to do something, but there's also a Senate bill that's dealing with some of these topics that you're working on, I understand. And just to make sure I'm clear, if I recall right, the area of, what's it called, Area 51?
93.
Area 93, yeah. That eventually was something where Washington County Metro and somebody else came up with the solution, came to us and said, look, you guys are going to have to change the county line and state law because we can't change it county by county. It's buried in state statute or the definitions of what's a county, so you have to change it. And so I guess my question is, what was 4078? I try to forget it.
Yeah, 4078,
that one. Those were all times when local government ended up agreeing. You're envisioning a case here where local government also agrees. And the question is, leave it ripe for appeal or have the legislature codify their agreement again?
Mr. Chair, that's what we're asking. And I would point out one more thing, Mr. Chair. I've got an opinion. I'll certainly send it to anybody who's interested in it. This is a Ledge Council opinion from April of last year. And we asked, as a result of the passage of 4078, if Metro and Washington County had the ability to designate or change the reserve designations for Metro and for property in Washington County. I'll read you just the first paragraph of the LC opinion. It says, you asked, it was from Senator Johnson, dear Senator Johnson, you asked whether a local government can change a land use designation established in statute by the Legislative Assembly. We conclude that land use designations established by the Legislative Assembly can be changed only if the Legislative Assembly passes a subsequent bill amending the relevant statute. So the problem we have, potentially, we've got, as President Hughes testified, we've got a 2018 look by Metro at expanding the boundary because in 2015 the council decided we didn't need to expand the boundary, so they're taking a fresh look at it in 2018. By law, they have to go expand the boundary onto the urban reserve designations. Mm-hmm. We've got the only county right now that has urban reserve designations is Washington County, and we have a letter from Ledge Council saying that only the legislature can change the urban reserve designations on property in Washington County. So I don't believe that Metro in 2018, if they want to expand the boundary, will have any land to expand the boundary onto. They can't do it in Washington County. Because only you can change the urban reserve designation.
But nobody would be changing the urban reserve designation. They would just be moving the UGB onto statutorily acknowledged urban reserve.
They would be moving. They would be changing them from urban reserves to urban growth boundary. They would be in that designation is a change.
Please give me a chance.
Vice Chair McLean, would you like to say
something?
First
of all, it's nice for us to spend 20 minutes listening to your history of what you think happened in the last 20 years. But this is a placeholder bill with no language that I can review. And number two, we just had up here in front of you a bill where we have local jurisdictions agreeing to make local decisions to help carry forward making available land for development. And we have two parties there, two counties, that are working actively right now in a positive way with their local jurisdiction MPO. So I would love to have this conversation when you have language. I would love to have this conversation when you would allow other people to give maybe some of the gaps that you left out in that history. But today, we're here to go forward, and the bill that we had just in front of this was very proactive in actually doing something for affordable housing and bringing in some land. I don't know what yours does, because I don't have any language to review. So I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, but this is as far as I can go in understanding what you want us to do today.
But Mr. Chair,
let me say something. I asked for a hearing because we are short on bills. I asked for a hearing, and I told people who don't have their bills ready to come and describe your situation, whether you have an amendment or not.
Okay.
So the fact you have no amendment or not is not going to be new. We're going to have about four next time that are in the same position because LC is so backed up, we're not getting any amendments.
Okay.
So I just said verbally describe it. I've already told them the plan isn't to move this bill. It's to describe the situation and then get testimony from the other side, which we're about to do.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Mr. Chair, to your question about the plan for this sort of thing, we have no intention, this goes to you, Vice Chair McLean, as well, of rolling a bill through the legislature that the local governments don't sign off on. That's not how House Bill 4078 worked at all. But it took a little bit of prodding from the legislature to get the local governments to recognize that this was perhaps the best path as the conversations occurred. And Mr. Chair, you'll remember in 2015, you had another meeting in Wilsonville City Hall where we sort of brought the stakeholders together as well. This is an iterative process that involves the local communities. There is no intent by the two of us to just roll a bill through. As much as I wish I had that much power, Mr. Chair, I'm not delusional, and I don't think that that's what I could do in this process. I think what we're trying to say, though, is you all thankfully stepped in 4078, and as I've had conversations with the chair of Washington County, he effectively put his county a decade in front of the other two because they are able to develop right now because they do have industrial land because they did get an urban growth boundary expansion. And if we sit and wait for a process that will be appealed indefinitely, that we are going to have big issues exactly to what you raised the concern with, Representative McLean, about affordable housing, about actually bringing land in.
Okay, so I do want the next witnesses to come up and talk about not so much the bill, because they don't know what the original bill is either, but what you've just verbally described.
I appreciate
okay.
it. Thank you,
Thank
Mr.
You.
Chair.
Okay. Jim, can you come up, and Tom and Tim together, we'll get all three levels of local government here, and maybe just tell us a little bit about where you're at on the reserves, too, because I know it's in very close to completion on your end.
You want to start?
Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, much as I enjoy chatting with you, Mr. Chair, we keep coming together on this subject tonight.
I may have to say your name one more time.
My name is Tom Hughes, and I'm the chairman of Metro Council. You and I have had this discussion on many occasions before. 4078, which is described in some parts of the region as the grand bargain, is not so much so in others. And I think that you will see on the Senate side at least some bills that have been introduced that will suggest to you many of the reasons why having the legislature even finalize the final process is probably not a good idea, because as many folks as we got in the room in the council chambers up in Hillsborough to talk about the final, there are a bunch of people who are now have a bill in the Senate that were not in the room. Yeah. And so it is the difficulty the legislature has with doing local land use planning, because you don't have the capacity to hear from everybody that we hear from at the local level. And that was the process that took place in terms of the reserves. It's a long, involved process. We understand that. Most of us have lived that through much of our professional careers or semi-professional careers, depending on how you look at being an elected official. We understand that probably better than anybody else. And because we do understand it probably better than anybody else, we would urge you to not repeat what, I still, quite frankly, think was a mistake that was made with 2478 in terms of, we're seeing echoes of that, because that then suggested that maybe that's the method of changing the of establishing urban reserves. From my perspective, and I'll let Chair Bernard describe this too, from our perspective, we have had discussions with both Multnomah County and with Clackamas County, and we think that we are sometime this spring we will probably complete the process. I would call your attention back to what the remand was about, and to make the distinction between the remand in Clackamas and Multnomah County as opposed to that in Washington County. In Washington County, the court said that the process of determining rural reserves had been irretrievably flawed, and that they were going to have to go back and redo rural reserves. And as a result of that, the urban reserves, they weren't even able to look at the question of the urban reserves. And so there were potentially other issues related to the rural reserve or urban reserves that would have to be adjudicated later on. That looked to us like an impossibly long process. Quite frankly, as I look at how long it's taken up until this point in time, we might have been better off to just let that process ride and see where we go. This is a very specific technical remand in each of the other two counties. Find additional evidence to support a particular finding in the case of the Stafford area in Clackamas County and in the area near what is called the L in Multnomah County. Conversations I had just this last week with the chair of Multnomah County suggest that they have moved forward and that they're ready to join with us in a joint statement to move this to LCDC, and I think Clackamas County is in the same position. But I'll let Chair Bernard answer that question.
Please.
Chair Clem and members of the committee, I am Jim Bernard. I'm the new chair of Clackamas County Commission, and I'm sitting here today because the voters said we need to put this behind us. I can seriously tell you that almost every place we went, this issue was top of the list for the citizens of Clackamas County, and that's why I'm sitting here today. Clackamas County is now, it's a new day. We're working with Metro, we're working with our cities to resolve this. In the Stafford area, we're working on an IGA or an MOU to try to address their concerns. There's a lot of misinformation out there about Metro's ability to demand density, for example. So we are working on a joint memo to resolve that problem. Even tonight, we have a event in Stafford, which we will be presenting the proposal that we're working with Metro on. I'm sure I'll be on the hot seat and have reviewed a lot of the information and facts. But the last speaker said that we were, basically in the same position as Washington County. We weren't. I participated in that decision, attending many meetings. 4,000 people attended those meetings. And in the end, the court said, Clackamas County, you did it right. Washington County, you did not. So this is what we want you to address: transportation. And that's what we're doing. Metro, I believe, has addressed that situation, and now we're just working with the community to assure them that Clackamas County is not coming in and developing your community. Metro's not coming in and developing your community. You're going to have that decision. The cities that surround you will have the opportunity to do that. In the previous, we talked about where those borders are. It's creeks and rivers. We happen to have one big river, the Willamette River, that the citizens of Clackamas County think is the line that we should stop at. Because beyond that, French Prairie is the best farmland perhaps in the country. And so it's very important that we preserve that. So tonight we'll be working with the Stafford Hamlet, CPOs, the cities. We've asked the city mayors and managers to sit down with us so we go over that MOU. We have had a couple of meetings with various members of city council who thought that this might resolve the problem. And, you know, frankly, if this is, does not resolve the problem, I will be back to ask for help. But it's very important that this be very, very focused. And Clackamas County Metro, you know, we've been holding Wilsonville up for years, and that's not happening now. We're here in the previous bill. We're here now to say we can resolve this with the help of Metro and our partner cities. So thank you.
Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Chair Clem, Vice Chair McLean, members of the committee. I'm Tim Knapp, the mayor of Wilsonville, and I certainly endorse everything that the prior two speakers have just communicated to you. We have, in fact, been held up by a recalcitrant county administration for the last 4 years, and allegations that the process itself is broken and have caused 7 years of delay are not an accurate representation, in my view, of where we are at today and why the delay has happened. It causes me strong concern to have advocates for this bill suggest that it is just a placeholder that they will subsequently bring you wording for an undeclared purpose, except that they want to be able to move more property into urban reserve. I feel strongly, based on the experiences we've had, that the process the entire region has been through in studying reserves, deciding reserves, is a valid process that we need to honor. I am very much opposed to some of the wording that has been suggested, even in this draft, that if a property met certain criteria, that it would be required to be moved into urban reserve. And that kind of an approach that would suggest neither the region nor the local municipality should have a say in what is needed or what is prioritized or what they are actually planning for how to build streets and sewer and water and those amenities that need to happen for urbanization. You cannot remove that the municipality's control of those things and have an effective outcome. Land speculation is inherently a risky business. There will always be the next party who owns a piece of land that they just want to get into the urban reserve so they can move it into the urban growth boundary. There's no end to the line of people that you will be hearing from if you start down that road. It is imperative that we not get started on legislative action to suit the interests of a few limited landowners instead of looking at the overall process. So it's regrettable sometimes that things get tied up in court so long. I could suggest that maybe those property owners should stop suing to try to make something happen that isn't a consensus in the whole region, and join in the consensus and find properties they can work on developing where there is consensus instead of threatening to sue indefinitely. I don't have too much else to say except that just on philosophy, the city of Wilsonville does not favor legislative intervention in this kind of a situation. It's not comparable to the Washington County situation that was described previously because you don't have a broad consensus of people that have worked and come to the table. You have a few limited landowners that want things to move in a particular way that advantages them financially. I urge you to support a do not pass vote on 2094 at this time. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. I think the, as you may know, this is what you would refer to. Their proposal, I think, which is not yet in writing, is what we refer to as a gut and stuff. I'm not sure they're advocating for the actual language that's in the bill that you commented on. But they may be. I'm not sure. I do personally want to endorse the concept that when we looked, and by we, I mean Richard Whitman and others, looked at Clackamas and Multnomah counties, it seemed such small issues and resolvable, but there wasn't really any pressing need. I did think it might be done by now, but it seems like maybe it took an election to resolve that issue, and that's kind of the way the system works sometimes. But they seemed fairly narrow. Having met with lots of people from Stafford over the years, I know it's not easy to figure out how to divvy that up and to get cities to figure out how they'll want to do something. And, you know, I think it's plausible that in the transportation conversations this time, the legislature may be able to help with some of the infrastructure costs that are causing some of the cities to not want to do something with Stafford because they're worried about 205. And I know no city on their own can just either A, legally, or B, financially widen 205. So for our chair of our transportation committee over there, part of what's holding up a piece of this is they do need some more help on 205. We're just doing a little lobbying here.
A few other places, yeah. There are others as well.
Yeah. And that will help, I think, on some of for some of the cities just need to know what how this would work if they did take in a new area to develop. So I think the one policy question that's brought up generally and it's not in these bills, and I don't want to spend a whole bunch of time on it, but I do think the issue that you just alluded to, Mr. Mayor, of sort of standing, like if you have all the electeds in agreement and there's one neighbor who's mad and they sue, it sometimes gets dicey, the good of the many versus the rights of the one, and we have bills about that every so often, but that's the part I think that may be relevant. It's if you all can figure it out, how long can one person who's mad that their farm may get put into a reserve designation that implies urbanization, how long can they hold everybody else up?
Yeah.
But that's not the bill for today. So
yeah.
Other folks on this topic at the moment? Okay. And I'm not going to do anything with these other two bills because I didn't really have a chance to talk to you all about these ODA technical bills, and we have two members sick, and I don't want to have them vote, and we'll have time next week to talk more about those. That's the dietary supplement and the incorrect statutory reference bill for ODA. Yeah, so I'm going to just carry over. I'm going to close the public hearing, first of all, on House Bill 2094. I'm going to carry over the work sessions on 2256 and 2364. Vice Chair McLean, I had a chance to meet the other day, and one thing that I thought would be helpful for committee members to know is if I haven't heard anything from you and nobody testified in opposition either, I sort of assume things are okay, and that's why I schedule work sessions, and they may not be okay. So if you still have questions that you didn't raise in committee and nobody else raised either, let somebody know so I don't just schedule them and then you're thinking, well, why are we voting on these? Because I just sort of hear silence means consent occasionally, and I don't mean to necessarily do that. So that's the ones that are clearly technical in nature, I figured, are probably safe. But at some point, there'll be some where you didn't choose to speak up, but that doesn't mean you like the bill either. And I'm totally aware of that. Anything else for the good of the order? Okay, thanks, for everybody. And I'm going to adjourn the committee.
Another day in paradise. Another day in paradise.